Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Hello, everybody. This is Dave Lickin. Welcome to Lickin' on Lending. It's another beautiful Monday here in Central Texas, but we're bringing folks together from all over the entire United States. And I tell you, I'm looking at all the listeners in there. You can tell there's a lot of people interested in this program. Today, we have as our special guest, Glenn Corso, talking to us about what's going on in Washington, D.C., talking about the Dodd-Frank bill today. And so we're going to have Glenn on here in just a short amount of time. Excited to have him join us again, as he has so many times. A special thank you goes out to Andrew Berman of the National Mortgage Professional, as well as to Howard Boyles, who are also put out a great deal of notice about the program today, because it's such an important program. As always, we thank our sponsors, the PMI Group, as well as DMD. Rob Katz and his our friends there at DMD. We're welcome to the program, everybody. And as we do each and every week, let's start off with a discussion about interest rates. Joe, what's going on?
Dave, rates are prices are up again. I guess rates are a little lower because of it. Just in the last few minutes, we have touched the highest price ever for the Fannie Mae 4% mortgage-backed security. Of course, you got to go back to the 50s, don't you, to get to rates like we're having right now, and there weren't any MBSs back then. So, I mean, this is touching the same price we got to briefly on Tuesday of last week, and the highest price ever. So, just as a symbol or a signal of the fact that there is a couple things. One, low inflation, very low inflation, no real sense of inflationary concerns in the near future. And the other is just economic uncertainty, both domestic and globally. We tend to react in the market to headlines. Depending on what the headline's saying, it really strikes the market. But so far, things have been trending favorably for mortgage rates. So we're at the lowest rates we've been in 50 years. Real briefly, last week we did see a nice movement forward in rates, lower in rates, Tuesday, and it kind of hung on for the week. The stock market even rallied last week, and it's been unusual for us to see both mortgage rates and the stock market rally in the same week. This week we have a lot of very significant economic news. We got retail sales coming out on Wednesday, and PPI coming out on Thursday, CPI coming out on Friday. So everyone is of the belief that inflation is tame and will remain tame. So, you know, if that number were a surprise to the high side, that would be really a shock to the industry. Don't expect it, though. We do see Treasury auctions this week, the 3, 10, and 30 starting today. In fact, we should have results from the 3-year auction just any minute, with the 10-year auction tomorrow at 1 and 30-year auction on Wednesday at 1. So busy week. Stay informed with what's going on in the market, but so far so good this week. Did we lose you, Dave?
I think we did. I'll dial back in.
I hear you now.
Well, thanks for the rate update, Joe. While we're waiting for Dave to dial back in, Andy, can you send us to a quick commercial, please?
Looking for that competitive edge?
MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Well, I'm not sure if Dave's going to be able to jump in. So, hello, everyone. This is Alice Alkin. I'm going to bring to you the legislative update at this point. We are so happy to have Glenn Corso on the program with us later today. So, I'm going to save that part of the discussion about the financial regulatory reform, the Dodd-Frank Act. We're going to have a very lengthy discussion about that later in the program. So, right now, what I want to do is give you an update of the legislation, the other legislation that we're watching. There's plenty more out there. Most importantly, I want to thank Jerry, my friend out there, who's reminding us we've got to stay on top of what's going on with RD and getting some additional funding. My connections over there is that we're still waiting. We don't have anything yet on the two bills in particular that we're watching to make sure we get an extension of RD funds. So that is House Bill 5017. And Senate Bill 3266 to extend the loan guarantee for the homeowners. We're still waiting. Hopefully RD will get some more money. They have some now to be able to offer a guarantee, but that you can't get funding from it until the full fund gets more money available. You can get loans approved, but you can't get them closed. So I did want to give you an update on a couple of other things we're watching. There are some bills out there, Senate Bill 3247, looking to amend the Fair Credit Reporting Act to be able to give customers free credit scores on an annual basis. We also have a new proposed rule out there that's open for comment. We'll bring more information on this to you next week, where FIFA has issued a proposed rule on July 9th for Fannie and Freddie transparency, trying to develop a framework, I should say, for their conservatorship and receivership. We'll have time next week to talk more in detail about that. As far as those of you who have been watching what's going to happen with Regulation Z, I think we'll see some more movement on some of those changes in the future under that proposed rule that we were watching for many months. Many of the provisions of Reg Z were put in the financial regulatory reform. So we will wait and see the final regulatory reform, and then I'm sure the ARM and other advertising issues that were addressed in Reg Z will come out at a later date. We haven't heard anything more in terms of any SAFE Act exemption for nonprofits, and we are still seeing that we have a red flags rule extension until the end of the year. So for now, one more bill, House Bill 5539. This is the Fannie Freddie Transparency Act that was introduced June 16th, and we're watching this bill also for you. That this would provide that during any period for Fannie and Freddie that they're under conservatorship, it shall be considered an agency subject to the public information disclosure requirements of the Freedom of Information Act. So that'll be interesting if you want to see what's behind the closet door, so to speak, over at Fannie and Freddie. We'll have more for you next week and some more details about these bills. We want to make sure we have plenty of time to talk with Glenn Corso about financial regulatory reform. So that's it for our legislative update. Dave, do we have you back
you,
yet?
Yes, thank you. I think I'm back. I had to dial in on the old conventional phone. The studio mic went dead. Folks, we're going to be right back after this quick break. Thank you for your patience.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin'.
Good to have everyone back with us. And, folks, this is an action-packed program. We've got Glenn Corso with us. We're talking about the very important issue related to the whole regulatory world and what's going on, about ready to come on down with the Dodd-Frank bill. And we're going to get to that in just a moment. Again, special thank you to so many of you that are dialed in from across the country. But each week as we do, we bring up one of our favorite segments, the Profit Doctor. Andy Show is the managing partner for MBS and the CPA and the CMB. He's got more initials behind his name, folks, than so many others on the program here. But anyway, Andy, welcome to the program. With all the changes, Andy, that are going on in the industry right now, how do you keep a good bottom line, a healthy bottom line, Andy?
Well, thanks, Dave. Hey, it's great to be on the show again. And, you know, all of the changes that we're facing in the industry just keeps people's heads spinning. We've got the show today with Glenn on, talking about all these changes that are still coming at us. And it's kind of like when you're going to be driving down the road and it's really bumpy with a lot of curves. You want to be sure and put your seatbelt on and strap in real tight. Well, there's some things you can do in your business to put on your seatbelt for your company to weather the storm and do the things you got to do to be profitable. And we've talked about this in previous shows, but I'm going to talk about it once again. The three E's and the three R's. Got to stay focused on the three E's: efficient, effective, and economic. If you make certain that all the things that you do are efficient, effective, and economic, you're going to be heading down the road much better. Also, the three R's: having the right people doing the right things at the right time. That's huge. These very basic six words will help a company stay on good financial track. Now, another thing, sorry about that, we've got the blooming Texas pollen outside.
I know, they can always affect you. Yep.
The other thing we got to remember, you got to focus on your foundation. You got to focus on the foundation of your business and make certain you've got it built correctly. Now, I would outline a foundation for growth as: have a vision. Where are you going to go? How are you going to get there? Measure where you're going. Optimize what you're doing, and then grow. And vision means you have a forecast. Have a financial forecast. Have a plan. It's not just shoot from the hip. It's have an idea about where you're going to go. And then as you're going, you need to measure. You need to look at the dial and see how fast you're going. You got to know your profit per loan, profit per branch, profit per originator. Essential information you have to know. You've got to have your dashboard. And you've got to optimize your business. You've got to have the best technology. You've got to have the best information. You need to have MBS quote line coming into your email every few minutes so you know what the market's doing. You've got to have the best process flow. You've got to have Alice look at your flow, make sure you're doing all the things right. And if you do all those things, then it's time to grow. Add branches, get more capital, acquire other companies. And, boy, Dave, as you know, now is the time to add branches. It's a great opportunity to grow in mortgage banking.
Yeah, it's so true, Andy. And there's so many times we've watched companies grow, and sometimes they've grown too fast without having that solid foundation. What else should we be watching for?
Well, boy, I got to tell you, Dave, with Glenn coming on next, there's all these regulatory changes. And one of the big regulatory changes that has hit the industry is on compensation. And
wow,
this is
yes.
Something that most mortgage bankers don't even think about, because loan officers go out and do what they do and make loans, and we make money, and everybody's happy. Well, most mortgage bankers don't pay overtime to loan officers because they go out and get loans, and if they get commissions, they get paid. Well, the Department of Labor has come in, and they've changed that. They've made it now so that mortgage originators are not classified as being outside sales anymore. That used to be what they could do, and the Department of Labor said, nope, mortgage loan originators are now inside sales unless you can prove otherwise. And the definition between inside and outside sales is a little bit fuzzy, but just think about it this way. If your originator comes into the office or the branch every morning, takes applications in the branch, stays in the branch, meets customers in the branch, then they are an inside salesperson, and they're going to be subject to minimum wage, and they're going to be subject to overtime. You've got to address this quickly. The penalties for getting this wrong is significant, and the way to figure it out is to talk to a labor lawyer. We have a labor lawyer that we work with quite a bit that's given me some of the information I'm sharing on the show today, Dave. But you've got to be careful about these regulatory updates. This has happened. The Department of Labor has made the ruling. this and all the stuff Glenn's going to talk about is affecting the industry. We cannot hope it's just going to go away, because if not, it's already
happening.
It's
here.
It's here, and it's going to hurt if you don't pay attention.
You got to pay attention. You're going to want to pay attention for the rest of the program, everybody. Thank you so much, Andy, for being the Profit Doctor, bringing us an update. Folks, we're going to be right back after this quick break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success. Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending, and we've got an exciting segment. If we could just get our folks, we had some technical difficulties earlier, and so we've lost the guest, Glenn. He'll be dialing hopefully back in just a minute, and we'll get him connected to the program. Folks, there is so much going on related to the bill that we're talking about, and Alice, Joe, as we get our producer, Andy Alvey, to get Glenn back on and on the switchboard, let's get into a discussion of what we're seeing and what's going on related to the senator, the two senators that really brought this on, Senator Dodd and Representative Frank. Let's talk about this bill. The Dodd-Frank bill has some of the most far-reaching ramifications in the industry. And Alice, we were talking about this, and Joe, we were talking about this on the program earlier. And Joe, as soon as we get you connected in, Glenn, please speak up so we know you're there and on the line. But folks, it is just amazing to me some of the changes that are coming on down the line. Alice, we've watched the whole segment. The industry begin to respond to this, and starting with the MBA and the whole concept of when you say a loan originator, what does that mean? Glenn, are you back on the
yes,
phone here?
Yes, Dave. I've been on and I could hear you. Anyway,
by the way, I apologize for that. We have so many blue callers trying to find you on the switchboard with a problem. But anyway, help us understand the loan originator.
So the term loan originator is only used in a couple of spots in the bill, and the term that the bill really uses much more frequently is mortgage originator, and that phrase can mean the loan officer, the broker, or the mortgage banking company only in table funding transactions. So, and the term loan originator, which is used in a couple of spots in the bill, can mean either the loan officer or the broker, but not the mortgage company.
Well, Glenn, this is Joe. One of the places that I was confused by which term was meant was regarding the unique identifier, where somebody's identification is going to be put on all the loan documents. Is that the originator or the company?
It's going to be the individual, so it'll be the loan officer or the broker, whoever is the licensed individual that's involved in the transaction.
And I guess that's for tracking purposes 5-10 years down the road.
It's exactly right, for tracking purposes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask, because I know we're going to talk about a lot of things here, and most people are going to wonder when these changes are to take effect, especially as it relates to the loan officer compensation and the skin in the game or the risk retention provision. So when might any of this become required operating procedures?
Well, most likely, Joe, it's going to be between 18 and 24 months after the president signs the bill into law. Now, it could be shorter. It could be as short as 12 months, or it could be as long as 42 months. But that both of those extreme times are considered pretty unlikely. So the best estimate right now, based on kind of tracking through all the various provisions, is 18 to 24 months out.
Okay. Well, you know, Glenn, one of the things we've seen in the bill, obviously, is we're going to end up with a new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, right? So now the rules that this bureau, CFPB, is going to put in place, will they be preempting state law? How do we have to factor in now federal rules with state laws going forward?
So the CFPB's rules won't be preempting the state law, and the states are going to be free to enact laws that are tougher than the CFPB regulations. Obviously, in an instance where the state law is not as tough as the CFPB regulation, all mortgage lenders that are going to have to adhere to the tougher standard.
Will there be a standard set of rules across state lines?
Well, for banks and bank-owned companies, there will be, but not for independent non-bank companies.
Will national bank originators be able to operate under a single set of rules?
They will be able to operate under a single set of rules. They won't be subject to state law. However, for the future, it's going to be harder for the federal banking regulators to preempt state laws.
Okay.
That is just so interesting. But one of the aspects about this Dodd-Frank bill that has probably got the most significant ramifications is loan officer compensation. Andy, I know we've talked a lot about that.
Yeah, Dave. Thank you very much. Glenn, great to have you on the show. So tell me, will the new provisions prohibit an LO from collecting more commission than usual for loans that are closed at a rate higher than the par rate?
Andy, the law states that an originator's compensation can't vary according to the terms and conditions of the loan except for the principal balance. So essentially what's going to have to happen is that a broker or an originator will get compensated on a per loan basis, but it won't be able to vary except for the principal balance.
Wow. Wow. Well, then, but can the company receive more but not share it with the LO?
Yeah, the law specifically exempts secondary marketing profit on closed loans. So the company can definitely earn more on their loans, and they cannot share it with the loan officer.
So Glenn, this is Joe again. Does so a loan officer can get paid based on a percentage of a loan, I guess, and that will be sort of the usual. But what is usual? Does the law identify a specific percentage?
No, the law really doesn't talk about a usual commission rate, and so it'll be up to every company to decide how they want to compensate, but within that rule about how it can't vary according to the terms and conditions of the loan except for the principal balance.
So by not varying based on the terms and conditions, let me just kind of ask, could it vary by office? Could it vary by region? Could it vary by, well, I guess that's part of it. And then the next is maybe not, because it's product, loan size, certainly interest rate.
Right. So, you know, Joe, for the really definitive answer, we're going to, of course, have to wait for the regulations. But there's nothing in the statute itself that prohibits a company from setting up a different compensation schedule for each loan officer or a different compensation schedule for different regions of the country.
Hmm. That's interesting. Glenn, I've got a question for you that was just sent on in here to us. Is can a loan officer give up part of his commission to give a customer a better deal? How does this rule affecting it?
Yeah, so unfortunately they can't because their compensation, again, their compensation can't vary. according to the terms and conditions of the loan. So if they want to give up part of their commission, as is typical in the industry today, in order to perhaps meet the rate that a customer is getting quoted by somebody else, you won't be able to do that.
Interesting. That is so. Well, what about these? We got a lot of net branches out there. So let's say an LO who is also a net branch manager receives net branch profits as a result of his personal production, as they do now. Can they continue to do so?
Well, here's what the law says exactly. It says that for any mortgage loan, a mortgage originator cannot receive directly or indirectly compensation that varies based on the terms and conditions of the loan. So I'd say in the example you just gave me, that the LO who's a net branch manager, if that net branch profit on their loans is calculated according to the terms and conditions of the loan, which of course it is because it depends on the profitability of the loans, then I'd say no, they're not going to be able to be compensated that way.
Well, Glenn, this is Andy. Along that same line then, can they get extra profits that come from other originators' production?
You know, that answer is a very, very tough one, and we're really going to have to wait for the regulations to definitively answer that, because the law says right now that a loan officer who's also a branch manager would fit the law's definition of a, quote, mortgage originator. Remember, I talked about that earlier. And the law states that for any loan, a mortgage originator may not receive compensation directly or indirectly that varies based on the terms and conditions of the loan. What the law doesn't say, which sounds kind of crazy, but it does not say that it has to be a loan that the originator worked on personally. So it's possible that the regulator could interpret the law that way, but there's no guarantee that they will.
Wow. Well, okay, so you own the own mortgage company. A lot of folks listening to the show have an interest in the company. They may own the company outright. Can a company owner receive profits from their own production above the normal commission they would have otherwise earned?
So the law has a specific exemption for secondary marketing profits from the sale of closed loans. So if the company is selling closed loans, the profit it earns from those sales are exempt from the compensation restrictions that we've been talking about, and the profits can be distributed to the owners in the normal course of business. But if the company is a mortgage brokerage so that they're not selling closed loans, then the prohibition would apply.
You know, we're having to talk through all this because it's referred to as a anti-steering provision, right? This concept of, that the loan originator can't be paid, can't base their compensation based on the terms and conditions of the loan. So if an FHA loan is more profitable for a company than a conventional, but more costly for the borrower, is that now considered steering to use FHA instead of conventional?
Well, Alice, the law says that mortgage originators, including the companies, are prohibited from steering consumers to loans that the consumer lacks reasonable ability to repay, that have predatory characteristics, or that are qualified mortgages under the ability to repay test, steering them from qualified mortgages to unqualified mortgages. So if you steer a consumer from a conventional loan to an FHA loan and you violate any one of those tests, then that would be prohibited.
But I guess the contrary is true. Even though one might be more expensive for your customer, and quite frankly, it might make more money for the company if you do it in an FHA loan as opposed to a conventional loan, that'd be, I guess that's not prohibited.
Right, and Joe, as a matter of fact, just as a follow-up to that, I mentioned qualified mortgages before. The FHA will get to define for itself what FHA mortgages are that are, quote, qualified mortgages under this ability to repay test. So I think that for the most part, you're probably going to be okay if you're persuading a consumer to take an FHA loan over a conventional one.
Okay. If you don't mind, let's go back to that concept of secondary marketing gains. And because, you know, the business I'm in, we see the market move fairly dramatically from day to day and within each day. And there are many times when a price sheet that's put out at early in the day may be a perfectly fine price at the time, but prices improve after that. And we've seen the ability of originators to both pass that on to their customer or, in some cases, retain some of that improvement in price. They quoted the right rate sheet, but things just improved after the fact. Can LOs get that under this new provision?
No. Again, since the law prohibits the originator from either directly or indirectly receiving comp that varies based on the terms and conditions of the mortgage, they won't be able to they won't be able to realize any gain to themselves for that.
Even though that happened subsequent to quoting, just happened to be the market proved before the loan got locked with the second secondary guys.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's interesting. Ezra, you know, Glenn, Senate bill, this all started with Senate Bill 3217, and then it became, again, which had the risk retention component, the skin in the game, the proverbial skin in the game features in this. And then has any of that carried through to the Dodd-Frank bill?
Yes. So there are risk retention provisions. But frankly, it depends on what kind of mortgage we're talking about. For instance, all FHA, VA, and USDA guaranteed loans are exempt from risk retention. So because these are the only loans that can go into Ginnie Mae pools, Ginnie Mae MBS are also exempt from risk retention. But for all other mortgage-backed securities, including MBS guaranteed by Fannie and Freddie, the loans backing the MBS will have to meet a qualified mortgage test, a qualified mortgage exemption in the law, in order to be exempt from risk retention.
Well, that's really interesting, Glenn. Now, well, what about, will risk retention be applied to jumbo production as well?
If jumbo loans meet that qualified mortgage test, then the securities that are backed by those jumbo loans will be exempt from risk retention. So the exemption from risk retention for qualified mortgages applies whether it's a conventional conforming or a jumbo loan.
Wow, so the trick is qualified mortgage. So for loans that meet the definition of loans for which risk must be retained, who retains it? The originator, the issuer? How does that work?
Well, the regulations say that the regulators who are going to draw up these risk retention regulations, and it's the federal banking regulators, the SEC, the Fannie Freddie regulator, FHFA, and HUD, working together, they'll decide whether both the securitizer and the originator will have to retain risk on securities and what the split will be between them.
Well, is there any guidance on how that split would occur? Would it be negotiated between the buyer and the seller, or how would that happen?
No, it's going to be set by regulation, and the one thing that the law does say is that if the total risk retention requirement is, let's say, 5%, then however it's split, it would be no more than 5% when you total both parts up. So it won't be 5% for the originator and 5% for the securitizer.
Okay.
It would be like a 2.5 and 2.5 split, a 3-2 split, something like that.
That brings up a lot of questions. Like, you know, what if you sell a loan to somebody and it's just going to – and they just keep it in their portfolio?
The risk retention requirements only apply to securitized loans. So if you sell a whole loan to a bank that holds it in their portfolio – then risk retention doesn't apply.
And that's kind of different, isn't it, from the original provision?
Oh, yes, it is. The House bill originally applied to all loans that were sold, whether they were sold as whole loans or sold as a pool backing mortgage security.
So I guess Well, one other follow-up on that, if you will, Glenn. The next question would be, assuming you sell a loan to somebody who subsequently securitizes it, you'd think that they'd have to retain all the risk themselves.
That's right. In other words, if it's not a qualified mortgage, and let's say you're mortgage banking company A, and you sell it to bank B, and then bank B turns around and decides to put that loan into a security along with a number of other loans and sell that security, the bank B, would be subject to the risk retention requirements.
So if a lender makes a loan that's not a qualified mortgage and keeps it in its portfolio, is its capital requirement any higher than if it were a qualified mortgage?
The law itself doesn't make any changes to the bank capital requirements based on whether a loan is subject to or exempt from risk retention. However, the regulators do have the ability to, of course, change bank capital regulations, so we really can't rule that out for the future, but there's nothing in the law that requires it.
So if the issuer is the one who's required to keep the risk or to reserve the risk, who would do that in the case of an originator that closes loans, sells the loans in an assignment of trade kind of transaction?
Well, you know, Joe, that's really a very tricky question. And to be honest with you, we're going to have to wait for the regulations to really definitively answer that. The reason is because the law talks about securitizers. And it says that securitizers, of course, have risk retention requirements if the assets don't meet any of the exemptions in the law. However, the way that the law defines securitizers are defined as either A, an issuer of an asset-backed security, or B, a person who organizes an asset-backed security transaction by transferring or selling, either directly or indirectly, assets to the issuer of an asset-backed security. I know that's kind of a mouthful, but essentially, in an assignment of trade transaction, I can't tell you for certain that the regulators won't say, hey, you know what, the issuer in an assignment of trade transaction is a securitizer as well.
And there's just so much information to digest here, Glenn, and we're going to take a quick break. But thank you so much, folks, for listening in. We got people listening from all over the country, and we appreciate you listening and passing the word on about this program. Folks, we'll be right back after this quick break.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower, from a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges. PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending, and we're very fortunate to have Glenn Corso be a part of us. I didn't do a very good job introducing Glenn at the top of the program because of some of the technology issues I was having out here. Maybe it's that congestion that Andy was going to dealing with here earlier. Maybe it's affecting my microphone. But anyway, Glenn comes to us with 33 years of experience. He's formerly with Senior Vice President of the PMI Group, which is we're so thrilled to have as a sponsor. He is one of three founders of the Community Mortgage Banking Project, and an advocacy group, an organization representing independent and community and regional-based mortgage banking companies. I want to welcome many of your members, Glenn, as listeners today. We have a large listening group today, and we welcome them as well. Glenn, let's continue on. One of the aspects about this that the Dodd-Frank bill does touch is appraisals. I know a lot of people are hoping that the HVCC is going to go away. Is that happening?
Yes, Dave, it is. It is happening, and so that's one. That's definitely one good thing about the Dodd-Frank bill. The unfortunate thing is, though, is that what the Dodd-Frank bill requires is for the Federal Reserve to issue interim final regulations on appraiser independence, and once those are issued, that will take the place of HVCC.
Well, I tell you, that's encouraging. That's going to be great news for a lot of people. I can hear the phones ringing in the background right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right with all this. Your phone's already started ringing off the hook out there, Glenn. I can only imagine what's going to be coming at you. And by the way, folks, if you want to join an organization that's going to be very strong voice for you in the independent mortgage banking, whether you're a community bank or whether you're an independent mortgage banker, folks, this group Glenn represents, the Community Mortgage Banking Project, is really being effective at working with us, and they're filling in, I think, some of the holes that the MBA might not be working as effectively on. Let's all get into the topic of underwriting. Alice, I know this is one of your favorite topics, underwriting.
Well, it is definitely near and dear to my heart. But, you know, Glenn, I have one last question I want to on that appraisal issue. So, but it's 90 days, right, that the Federal Reserve has to come up with something fairly quickly. And so, as you were stating earlier when we talked, who knows what we'll get in when they have to rush to that type of a policy.
Yeah, Alice, that is definitely a risk that we're going to be facing. It's kind of a roll-the-dice proposition because – essentially, the Federal Reserve is directed to issue these interim final rules, and then at some point, the interim final rules will be replaced by rules that are jointly issued by the federal banking agencies, the FHFA, and this new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But the one good thing is that the law does recognize that there needs to be an ability for communication between originators and appraisers, so that you can pass some factual information back and forth, and the law indicates that the regulations should reflect that greater flexibility.
Now, I just have to remind all our listeners, I remember the very beginning part, so we talked about that this is very far from implementation, and, you know, we get people all the time going, hey, I heard on the show today, HVCC's been repealed, you know, and today the loan officers start talking to the appraisers, so we need everybody to, it still has to get signed, this thing has a long way to go, but there is hope for those of you. I heard it. Anyway, on the underwriting side, you know, so there's parts of it to talk about minimum underwriting standards, and, you know, obviously the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is going to set some of this up. Well, will this stop portfolio lenders from making, you know, the handshake kind of loan? Or I know this member at the credit union, they've been a member for a really long time and they're a good depositor, maybe what some people might call good old boy loans. Will everything have to be fully documented, even in the portfolio?
Alice, there are some provisions in the law that give greater flexibility to lenders that are operating in rural areas. But they'll still have to fully document a borrower's income and assets. But they are given some greater flexibility because the law really puts a lot of restrictions around loans that have either balloon features or feature negative amortization or deferral of principal repayment. So rural lenders are given some more flexibility on those types of things. But they still will have to document borrower's income and assets.
So everybody's going to go get a branch out in the middle of nowhere in their state, just so they can. Okay. All those rural branches now, their price just went up. Okay, so will minimum standards then apply?
Minimum standards will apply, except, you know, for the greater flexibility for rural lenders that I mentioned. And then in addition, the loans will apply, the rules will apply across the board. So it'll be the same for bank-owned lenders as well as non-bank lenders, because it's being done under the Truth in Lending Act, which of course applies to everybody.
Yeah. So now that we have this test, so to speak, you know, that I have the ability to repay, is this something a borrower could use if they went into foreclosure and felt they were given a loan that they shouldn't have been given?
They absolutely will, and there's no time limit on that. So if you make a loan after this law is in effect, and then 5 years later there's a foreclosure action involving a loan that was made after the law was passed, the borrower can raise it as a defense and claim that the lender didn't properly adhere to the ability to repay test.
Wow. So there's this ability to repay section of the Act, and it says that you should not consider the equity in the property being mortgaged when determining the ability to repay. So does this say that we no longer are able to consider LTV and qualifying for a borrower for a loan? You know, I can't use a 30 LTV as a major compensating factor anymore?
Oh, no, not at all, because essentially your lenders won't be prohibited from setting a minimum down payment requirement, but what they will have to do is essentially evaluate the borrower's income and assets against the monthly payment due on the loan. So as long as you can show that the borrower has sufficient income to service the debt, then you'll be okay.
Well, and I think that's one of the challenges, because we have a lot of those loans, you know, maybe a very low LTV, but the borrower perhaps is on a fixed income but lots of assets, but I can't get the debt ratio, for example, under 60. You know, there we see lenders taking that in portfolio all day long, especially if all the money's on deposit with them. So will I no longer be able to do high ratios with low LTVs?
You know, we're going to really have to wait for the regulations on that one, because that's the kind of thing where the devil is going to be in the details. And if you read the law, you really can't say one way or the other whether those kinds of loans you'll still be able to do them going forward.
Boy, I tell you, there's so much information. Alice brought up a good point earlier. I could just hear everybody, all the loan officers running around out there in the country and go, I heard it on the Lickin' on Lending
Right.
So it must be true. Folks, it's important to remind you of the fact at this point right now, you can go back, and you should, especially if all the programs we've done, you can go on here, go into the podcast, and you can go listen to everything that we have been talking about and go over it. So download it to your favorite MP3 device and listen to what's going on. There's a lot of information going on. And, of course, we're going to give Glenn's contact information here at the end of the program. Don't overwhelm him with too much, but listen to the program through a podcast. Glenn, one of the things that we're talking about is the liability. And, Joe, let's get into a whole liability discussion. There's a lot here.
Well, you know, going back to the start of the show, we talked about what did certain terms mean. Like, did mortgage originator mean the individual, or the company? And as I was looking at this liability provision, it talks about three times compensation or three times revenue as a penalty for a violation, up to actual damages and three times compensation. And as I was reading that, I had to ask myself, are they talking about the originator or are they talking about the company?
So, Joe, they're really talking about both there. This provision that you're mentioning creates individual liability for the loan originator, and there is also, of course, liability for the company. But now it's on the individual as well.
Well, and that's new. I mean, other than for things like fraud or misrepresentations and things like that, is there a precedent for an originator to be penalized for something like this?
No, this is new, and specifically what you're talking about, the penalty of three times compensation, is for a violation of the anti-steering provisions, which, as Alice pointed out, is really the loan officer and broker compensation restrictions that we were talking about earlier.
and that would be a penalty to the loan officer.
That would be a penalty to the loan officer. The company is liable as well, but the loan officer will be liable individually under that.
So if someone pays him too much, he's at risk.
Well, I think the loan officer will have to make sure that whatever compensation plan he and the company decide on, that they're not violating that basic rule of can't vary according to the terms and conditions of the loan except for the principal balance.
Well, and what about the other provisions where the loan officer's got to make sure that the customer has the ability to repay and all that?
The penalty for violation of that is on the company.
Okay. Like it'd be an originator's kind of making that decision.
Well, you know, for the most part, if you look at the ability to repay test, it's essentially saying, look, you've got to underwrite these loans. You've got
right.
to fully document it. You've got to conduct a test to show that the borrowers can really repay the money that you're lending them. That, to me, is very much of an underwriting function. And so that's why they put that on the company, because they realize that others besides the loan originator will be making that determination.
Well, Glenn, is all this creating an environment with an originator, loan originator, the actual employee, that is like he's got a fiduciary duty to the customer?
Well, Joe, that's probably going a little far. I don't think the law goes quite that far. What the new Consumer Bureau is given is the ability to prohibit terms, acts, or practices that are not in the best interests of the borrower. But a fiduciary duty requirement goes beyond that to state that, you know, the individual has an affirmative duty to act in the best interests of another person. The law doesn't go quite that far, but it takes us a lot closer to that than we've ever been before for loan officers.
Wow.
Well, that would seem to add a tremendous amount of risk to you know, both the LO and the company they work for.
It certainly does. There's going to be a greater risk going forward in being a loan officer and for the company in employing loan officers. But, of course, consumers still need mortgages to buy homes. That business is still going to be out there, and it's going to be available to those who master all of these new rules and figure out how to work within them.
I tell you, it sounds like, Glenn, that this is setting up a huge opportunity for the plaintiff bar. And our firm does a lot of legal expert witness work, and it looks like we might be busy in the months ahead, or the years ahead, based on some of this that's coming out. Do you really see this setting up a lot of liability for lenders, increasing the liability?
You're an attorney. And Dave, it's a direct reaction to everything that went on in the 04 to 08 time period. Unfortunately, the law approaches this as if all lenders acted like subprime lenders did in the
exactly
04
right.
to 08 time period.
So do you see this, Glenn, that is that steering in this whole, you know, the financial penalties, something that you think could go on as a single loan basis? I mean, many of these things are, is there a pattern in practice that an auditor finds? I guess all that just remains to be seen, or is there anything specific in the reg?
Well, the law provides that it could be done on a single loan basis. I think practically speaking, from an enforcement standpoint, what you'll see is it'll be done on, as you're saying, a pattern and practice kind of thing. But the law would allow it for it to be done on an individual loan basis.
Glenn, you mentioned that the actual final rules and implementation of this is 18 to 24 months down the road. Clearly, right now, the 2004 to 2008 practices are fresh on everyone's mind. What are the chances that by this time in 2012, things have moderated a bit and some of these concerns are kind of history?
Well, Joe, in some respects, that could very well happen. But particularly in the many of the things that we've been talking about, the ability to repay test and the loan officer individual liability, that sort of thing, those are actually written into the law. So that what you would need is you would need Congress to amend the law in order for the regulator to, have different kinds of standards in the regulations. But absent Congress changing the law, the regulator has some flexibility, but not a great deal of flexibility on those kinds of things.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Alice, Joe, we've got to wrap this segment up. We could just go on and on and on, and I think based on some of the feedback we're going to get, we're going to come back to Glenn and have you on again to answer any questions that might come up. Folks, I just looking at the calendar, we got to be sensitive to that, as we do with all these radio programs. There is a clock out there and a calendar, and we got to stay on top. But we've had Glenn Corso, who is the Managing Director of the Community Mortgage Banking Project. Glenn, what's the best way for people to reach you?
So, Dave, the best way is email, and it's Glenn, G-L-E-N, at mortgagepolicy.org.
Glenn at mortgagepolicy.org. Don't forget the .org. I've done several times .com and messed it up. So anyway, but Glenn, thank you so much for being on the program. Folks, you can download this program by going on to the Blog Talk Radio website, Licking on Lending, and you can download that. Look for this program. I'll feature it as a special that should be very clear for you to see, and you can listen to it. Thank you so much, Glenn, again, for being a part of it. Folks, there's so much news that goes on out there that we try to bring to you, and we focus one segment, one program on one key piece. There's nothing more important than what's going on here, but we also want to make you aware of what else is in the news. And Rob Katz of Delmar Database, DMD Inc. has been out there and helps us stay on top. Rob, what is going on in the news?
Hey, another great show, team. Thanks for all the information. There were a couple of stories in the news from the last couple of weeks that I want to share with our audience. Business Week had a write-up about the Federal Reserve's position on how long it'll take for lending to return to normal. Elizabeth Duke, the only Fed Reserve governor with banking experience, estimates that it will take years for things to get back to what we think of as normal, citing employment as the long pole in the equation. You can find the story at businessweek.com and search for Elizabeth Duke. And Mortgage Technology News ran a column by Scott Everett, the president of Supreme Lending. He explains how his company is working with the HVCC guidelines to avoid problems and still get loans done. He provides some valuable insight for anyone struggling to untangle the web of HVCC. Scott's a very bright guy. You can find the article at mortgage-technology.com. And finally, Mike Sorahan included a story in the MBA NewsLink newsletter on Friday about the growth of social networks across businesses. We recently launched our social network activities at DMD with a Twitter account and Facebook page, so this story made my ears perk up. Lending is such a personalized business, I would expect that your originators are doing lots of activity on social networks. The question you need to ask yourself now is, are they representing your company the way you want to be represented? And do you have policies in place to control what they're doing? You can find Mike's story in last Friday's NewsLink. Well, team, that's what I've got for you this week. I'll check in again next week with the news I think everybody needs to know.
Thank you so much, Rob, for doing that. Appreciate it, bringing us what's going on. The news that didn't make the news, so to speak, here. Thank you so much. And, folks, you got to go out and listen to or go and contact a DMD, Delmar Data Tracks, one of their folks, and get a hold of probably one of the best systems in the marketplace. We appreciate you listening each and every week to what is going on in the industry. Again, the purpose of this program is to help you digest all that's going on, have one place, central place to go to. Please tell others about the program. We appreciate the growing listenership. Folks, have a great week. Again, this is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending, and a special thank you to our special guest, Glenn Corso. Have a great week, everybody, and tune in next week.
This has been Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com.
Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.